welcome back to another episode of the Crimson Playhouse podcast. I'm your host, Crimson Renee, and today we're diving into chapter 6 of The Velvet Muse. In the last chapter, the tension inside the Velvet Muse reached a low simmer with heat rising from all sides. Mason, brooding, steady, still holding on to old wounds, finally cracked his armor and confessed the weight he's been carrying since Liza left. But as old truth surfaced, Maxwell arrived with charm, charisma, and a vibe Liza couldn't ignore if she tried. Now, renovations in the club are fully on the way, but emotionally, a mess. Liza's torn between the man who once broke her heart and the man who might be offering something new. Chapter 6, let's just say, is where feelings get a little louder and choices start to get real. Before we jump in, if you've been loving the series, take a second to like, subscribe, and leave a review. It helps more than you know, and it lets the algorithm know to put us in front of more story lovers just like you. And if you're craving more of The Velvet Muse, bonus scenes, early access, and behind-the-scenes content, join me on Patreon. It's where we go deeper into the characters, the love, and all the messy little in-betweens. All right, let's dim the lights and slip into the soft hum of Baywood Heights. This is Chapter 6. Chapter 6. Last night's conversation with Mason refused to leave me alone, the weight of his words setting into my chest like a stone. Why was it always him who could pull at my emotions like this, leaving me tangled between anger, nostalgia, and something I didn't want to name? I forced myself out of bed, shaking the thoughts away. There was too much to do, and I wasn't about to let my unresolved feelings throw me off course. As I pulled on a sweatshirt and leggings, my phone buzzed on the nightstand. Maxwell. Morning, boss. You're still letting me help today, right? A smile tugged at the corners of my lips, but before I could reply, another text came through. Maxwell.
Also, I'm bringing breakfast tacos. Don't argue. I need something to do. Don't want to get mistaken for being unemployed again.
I winced, remembering my faux pas yesterday when I hadn't realized Maxwell was a Grammy-nominated world-touring saxophonist. A quick internet dive last night revealed more than I was prepared for. Maxwell Hayes wasn't just talented, he was a phenomenon. And yet, here he was, sending me breakfast updates like any other guy. Me. Fine, but if they're not amazing, I'm never letting you live it down. By the time I made it downstairs, the crew was already hard at work. The rhythmic thrum of drills and hammers echoed off the walls, the scent of sawdust thick in the air. Maxwell arrived shortly after, balancing a tray of coffee in one hand and a bag of pastries in the other.
Your delivery, boss,
he said, handing me a cup of coffee with a grin that could melt glaciers.
The taco place was closed, but don't worry, I'll make it up to you.
You'd better, I teased, taking a sip of the coffee. You set high expectations.
You'll survive,
he said, flashing me a wink. Before I could respond, Mason walked in, and the air shifted like a storm rolling in. He didn't speak, just nodded at his crew before diving into the day's work, his movements sharp and precise. But his presence was impossible to ignore, and my eyes found him despite my best efforts. His jaw was tight, as though he were holding back the weight of a thousand unsaid things.
You okay?
Maxwell asked, leaning in just slightly, his concern genuine. I forced a smile. I'm fine. Let's focus on the work. Later on at lunchtime, my phone buzzed with another message from Maxwell. Maxwell,
jazz festival tonight? I'm performing. Come see me shine.
I hesitated,
fingers hovering over the screen. Part of me wanted to say no, to stay buried in the safety of my to-do lists. But Maxwell's energy was infectious, and before I could overthink it, I typed back, "Me. All right, but you'd better be good." The festival was everything I hadn't realized I needed. String lights wrapped around the trees, casting a warm glow over the crowd, while music filled the air, vibrant and alive. I found a spot near the stage just as Maxwell stepped into the spotlight, his saxophone glinting under the lights. From the first note, he was magnetic. The crowd swayed to the rhythm, entranced by the soul he poured into every melody. But it wasn't just the music. It was the way Maxwell owned the stage, like he was born to perform. For the first time in a long time, I felt a spark of something close to joy. After his set, he found me near the stage, breathless and beaming.
"So, did I redeem myself from the missing breakfast tacos?"
I laughed, the sound coming easily.
"You were incredible. I see why people love you."
"People? What about you?"
he teased, leaning in just enough to make my heart skip. I rolled my eyes, but I couldn't stop the laugh that followed.
"Fine, you won me over."
"Good. Can't have my boss thinking I'm mediocre,"
he grinned. But then his expression softened.
"You deserve to feel good, Liza, to be around people who remind you what life's supposed to feel like."
Something in his tone struck a chord deep inside me, but before I could respond, he added,
"I've got to ask, what's the deal with you and Mason? There's tension there. History."
The question threw me off balance, and for a moment, I didn't know how to respond. "It's complicated," I said finally. "We were together for years, engaged, but it ended badly." Maxwell nodded, his gaze thoughtful.
"Engaged. And now?"
"Now we are just here. He's working and I'm trying to get this place ready. That's it." He studied me for a moment, then gave a small nod.
"Fair enough. Just wanted to make sure I wasn't stepping on any toes."
I forced a smile, but his word stayed with me. Was he stepping on toes? Did I care if he was? We spent the rest of the evening wandering through the festival, grabbing snacks from food trucks and stopping to watch other performers. Maxwell's energy was like a balm to my restless mind. He made me laugh, made me forget, even only temporarily. By the time he drove me back to the club, I didn't want the night to end. As he pulled up, he turned to me, his expression softer.
"I really enjoyed being around you, Liza. You're refreshing. I hope we can do this again."
For a moment, I was speechless, caught off guard by his sincerity. "Maybe we can," I said softly. His grin widened.
"That's not a no. I'll take it." "Good night, boss."
The next morning, I sat for Marcy describing the night over coffee. Her eyebrows shot up as I described the festival, Maxwell's performance, and his parting words.
"Have fun with that one," she said, smirking.
"Maxwell Hayes is dangerous. Smooth talkers like him could charm the paint off a wall." I blushed. "It wasn't like that."
"Sure it wasn't," she teased.
"Just don't let your guard down." Her words followed me throughout the day as I busied myself with sorting through my dad's old records. They were a treasure trove of jazz history. Miles Davis, Coltrane, Ella Fitzgerald, all carefully preserved, each one carrying a memory of a time when this club had been alive.
"Found something interesting?"
Mason's voice broke through my thoughts.
I looked up to see him standing in the doorway, his gaze softer than it had been in days. I held up a record, just trying to figure out what to do with these. They're too valuable to leave out, but they deserve to be displayed. He nodded, stepping into the room.
Your dad would have loved that. He spent hours cataloging them, you know.
I smiled faintly. I remember. He used to yell at me for putting them back in the wrong order. Mason chuckled, the sound low and warm.
Sounds like him.
For a moment, the tension between us eased, replaced by the warmth of shared memories. But when the silence stretched, the weight of everything unsaid crept back in.
You're really putting your heart into this place,
he said quietly.
Your dad would be proud.
The sincerity in his voice caught me off guard, and I felt the sting of tears at the edges of my eyes. Thanks, I whispered. His gaze lingered, as if he wanted to say more. But instead, he stepped back.
Let me know if you need help.
That night, I was upstairs in my apartment when my phone buzzed. I expected a message from Maxwell, but instead, Mason's name lit up the screen. It was a screenshot of a wall mount designed for displaying vinyl records. Below it, a simple message. Mason.
I can have it ready at the club in a few weeks.
I stared at the screen, my chest tightening. No explanation, no pleasantries, just the offer. Practical, thoughtful, and undeniably Mason. I didn't reply, not yet, but as I lay in bed, the weight of his message pressed against my heart, blurring the line between past and present, and leaving me more uncertain than ever.
And that was chapter 6 of The Velvet Muse. Whew. Emotions are building. Chemistry is crackling and Baywood Heights, she's stirring up a storm. Thank you for spending this time with me and letting these characters live in your ears and your imagination. There's so much more coming, more love, more longing, more late night revelations, and I can't wait to share it with you. If you haven't already, go ahead and follow or subscribe so you'll never miss a chapter. And if you want to take it deeper, come join the Players Club over on Patreon. You'll get bonus chapters, early access to new episodes, and maybe, you know, some little extra thought processes here and there. We will see. But it's all about building a community, so come and join me over at patreon.com/CrimsonPlayhouse. I am Crimson Renee, and this has been the Crimson Playhouse podcast. Thanks for being here. See you next week.